Blog Talk Radio.
This is Passing for Normal, conversations with authors, artists, activists, and awakeners about how they are seeding change in the world. I'm Sharon Weil, author of Donnie and Ursula Save the World, the funniest book about love, sex, and GMO seeds you'll ever read. But mostly, it's about everyday courage and what it takes to get there in your own personal, even unconventional way. So join us for fun and insightful discussion with some very inspirational people about how to turn purpose and passion into action, while at the same time, passing for normal.
Hello and welcome to Passing for Normal. Today, my wonderful guests are Tom Verner and Janet Fredericks. Together, they are magicians without borders. They travel the world bringing love, laughter, and magic to refugee and orphan children in many of the most war-torn, difficult, and forgotten places in the world. Since 2003, they have performed for over 600,000 children in countries like Haiti, Sudan, Somalia, Burma, and Bangladesh. They also perform in VA hospitals around the United States and train warrior wizards to perform magic for veterans and their families. They are two of the loveliest, most talented, compassionate, and entertaining people you will ever meet. Welcome, Tom and Janet.
Well, thank you, Sharon. It's great to be here.
Yeah, happy to be here, Sharon.
I'm so happy for you to be here, and I just want our listeners to know that we just spent time together in Baja, California, playing with the gray whales.
Unbelievable.
It was
amazing.
I know, what a precious time that was. So, to begin, Tom, you call yourself a recovering psychologist and professor, and Janet, you are a beautiful, fine artist. So how did the two of you become a magician and his silent mime assistant named LaFleur?
Well, the recovering psychologist is sort of a joke, but it's not. In some ways, it feels like a profession that is constantly in process of defining itself. For 45 years or so, I've been a psychologist, a magician, and a professor. And when we started Magicians Without Borders 12 or 13 years ago, it was as if all three of those parts of myself came together in some wonderful way. And do you want to say anything?
And at the same time, I discovered a part of myself, an alter ego, I would say, LaFleur. Who emerged out of a need that Tom had when he was performing to engage people before and after the show so he could set up and take down his show. And so I said, I'd like to be a part of it. And I created a character, LaFleur, who just came to me in a vision. And apprenticed myself to mime and other theater people that we knew, and ventured out on this new path.
That's incredible. So can you describe what the work of Magicians Without Borders is? What is it that you're doing?
Well, let me just say kind of what inspired us to start this. I was traveling to a meeting in Eastern Europe in 2001 in the fall, and through an amazing set of circumstances, I ended up in the refugee camps in Kosovo. Mm-hmm. And the very first camp I went into, I was introduced to this little girl. She was only 6 years old. Her name was Fatima, and I was told she was going to be my guide that day. Mm. And I was told that she knew everybody in the camp and everybody knew Fatima. So we were together all day. She would help me. She was just one of those really bright little kids. I spoke no Roma, no Serbo-Croatian. She spoke no English. Mm. And yet we really seemed to communicate. It came time to leave. I was talking to some Roma women, and Fatima was standing beside me. I said goodbye to the women. I turned to say goodbye to Fatima, and she was gone. And I said to the Roma women, "Where's Fatima?" And they said, "Well, we thought she was with you." And I said, "No, she isn't. She was all day, but she's gone." And I felt badly that I wasn't going to get to say goodbye to her. So they said they would say goodbye to her for me. So I take my magic props over to the car, and I look in, and there's Fatima hiding on the floor of the back seat of the car, wanting to run away with the circus.
Yes,
the
literally.
So the Roma women came over. She was a good Roma kid. She took her best shot. It didn't work, but she was smiling, waving us down the road. So we came to a little town called Shutka, and it really wasn't a refugee camp, but it was my UN driver said it was swollen with refugees, and he said, "Life is terrible in Shutka. They need some magic in Shutka. Let's do a show for the people of Shutka." So we go in, we set up our stuff in the town square, and within a few minutes, there were like 350 people.
Wow.
And so the show went well, and it ended, and people dispersed except for one old, wild-looking Roma woman with a big head wrap and gold teeth and mirrors all over her dress, and a small group of Roma men standing to my left. And so the woman, she comes up to me, and she drops a coin into my hand, and somehow I knew it wasn't a tip. She points to it, and she had seen me multiply flowers and sponge balls and all kinds of things, but she points to the money and says, "Make more money." Mm-hmm. So I laugh, but she was completely serious. So I take the coin, I put it in my hand, I squeeze it, and I open my hand, and there's a big chunk of what looks like gold. And I offer it to her, and she's mildly amused, but she says, no, money, more money.
Real money.
I throw the gold back in my hand, and I squeeze it, and I open it, and there is a 50 denar Macedonian gold coin, about 10 times what she had given me.
Mm-hmm.
It's still only 8 cents. But she was totally thrilled, and I drop it in her hand. She walks away smiling. Instantly, those two of the Roma men say, "Make us visas to America." And I laughed. But I looked at them, and they were also completely serious. They had just seen money multiply tenfold, and surely I could produce a visa out of the air. But I told them I didn't, unfortunately, know that trick. So the end of the day came. I'm sitting in this little place in Skopje, Macedonia, and I'm thinking about, this is the first time I've ever been in a refugee camp. Lafleur and I have been in hundreds of refugee camps now, but that was the first time. And I was thinking about what happened, and two things struck me. I didn't realize that the seeds of Magicians Without Borders was planted that day.
Mm-hmm.
First thing I realized was nobody spoke English, and I didn't speak their language, but we all spoke magic. And magic, all of a sudden I realized, I'd been doing magic for 30-some years, was a universal language. It was amazing. Beautiful. And the other thing, and I thought of this refugee, a Jewish refugee from Hungary who came to America in the late 19th century with his rabbi father and mother and brother and sister. His name was Eric Weiss. And we now know him as Harry Houdini.
Mm.
And Harry Houdini once said, "Sometimes when I do magic, especially for poor people, it not only amazes and amuses, but it sometimes awakens hope that the impossible is possible." And I said, that's what I saw today. Mm. Fatima saw magic. She thought, maybe I can get out of Momen Potok. and those men from Chutka saw magic, and they said, maybe we can go to America and realize our hopes and dreams. So that's the cornerstone of Magicians Without Borders. Magic is a language, and it can inspire hope that the impossible is possible.
That's so beautiful. So what do you think it is about magic that inspires hope? What, I mean, because in fact, some of these are tricks, right? There are illusions. But so what right. is it that kindles the imagination?
Do you have any thoughts about that? do you want me to start?
I think you ought to start on that one.
Okay. Well, I think, like I said, I think that unlike maybe even some of the other performing arts, which certainly can be marvelous for, you know, bringing hope and happiness and to people and joy, and magic has this, it's magic. No, I mean, it really kind of awakens this sense that maybe the impossible is possible. And I think it happens on a very profound level. You know,
I think there's mystery all around us. And it's very mysterious to see somebody make things disappear and then reappear, even if you know it's a trick.
Yes.
I mean, that's even better sometimes, the ball can return or the silk scarf returns, and where was it and how is it that I didn't see where that went to? So, you know, if he can make it happen, maybe there's hope that something, you know, some greater power can make something happen. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Well, in fact, you know, I had the pleasure of seeing you, Tom, perform. And, you know, I have those same questions. I'm like, well, where did it go? Well, how are you doing that? Well, you know, how can someone affect change like that? And like you were saying, Janet, it's like, well, what am I not seeing? You know, and in terms of something that feels hopeless, well, what am I not seeing? Maybe there is something else. If I only saw it differently,
uh-huh.
the situation yeah. could change.
Yeah, and the folks we often perform for, you know, before we started doing this work, I think we imagined that refugee camps were places where people went, you know, for like 6 months or a year maybe, and then the war, you know, blows over, comes to an end, and they go back home. But the people we perform for have been in camps for
20 years,
you know, 15,
years.
20 years. No, all over the world, people are in camps. We were in a camp in Afghanistan, Iran border, and it was wonderful. We went into the camp, and this wonderful Afghan elder met us and welcomed us, and he said, where would you like to perform? And we said, well, we'd like to maybe perform in an inside space if we could, but if not, outside will be fine. So he got this kind of little puzzled look on his face, and he said, our only inside space is the mosque. He said, but we'd be honored to have you perform in the mosque. Hmm. So LaFleur and I did a show for 500 girls and then 500 boys. And afterwards, we were having tea with the elder, and he said, and he expressed the mission of Magicians Without Borders as well as anybody. He said, you know, I've been in this camp for 17 years. Since the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. And he said, you're the first entertainers to ever come to this camp. And he said, the international agencies, they take such good care of us. They give us shelter, food, clothing, security. He said, but, and I don't mean any blame. He said, but I think sometimes they imagine we're only bodies.
Mm.
He said, but today, you fed the minds and imaginations of those children, and they'll be thinking and talking about this show for many, many months. So God bless you, and please, please come again.
Wow.
That's another way, I guess, that we awaken a certain kind of hope or imagination.
They feel seen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they, where they've been forgotten. And when we come from America, a wealthy, prosperous country, and we come, not asking for anything. In fact, we do all our shows for free. And the fact that we come into a refugee camp and perform for them somehow means a lot, and that we often with interpreters, we can talk with these people and we share stories besides our magic. And often I'm invited into the women's, huts, and they love to hear the stories. And so we're citizen diplomats, too, at the same time. And I think that's, in some ways, that may inspire some hope that they've been seen by us.
Yes, and absolutely.
When Janet says seen, I mean, we've been in refugee camps, say, in Sudan, where we had to drive in a Land Rover for 10 hours along a road that the UN built to get to the refugee camp.
Mm-hmm.
And these people live, and they really often feel the world has forgotten them.
Yeah.
You know, they're so far from their home, and they're so far from anywhere, because these are huge camps, 30,000, 40,000 people.
Sometimes these people can't go back to their countries because they've lost their citizenship. They're no longer recognized as Sudanese or
Is that because
of the change in government, or is that because they've just been gone so long? Why is that?
Or they've been gone so long, or their village has been completely destroyed. Mm-hmm. They have nowhere to go. And they also have no legal status often in the host country, that's wonderful to host them, but they don't have any legal status, so they can't get a job, or they can't
go home. Right.
Something that do you have any thoughts or anything you want to say right now?
Well, I wanted to ask you how you choose the places where you go.
Initially, we chose Ethiopia. That was the very first place, and that was a choice on our part. And that was primarily because I think we chose it because it had so many refugees. It has a 2,000-mile border with Sudan. It borders Somalia. It borders Eritrea. And all three of those countries, there's been, terrible wars, protracted wars. So they host millions of refugees over the years. And so we went there, and then we met people and UN staff who are often, might be a Bangladeshi man and a Bosnian and a American and a Frenchman or whatever working in the camp. And so they say, they would love this in Bangladesh, or they would love this in, wherever. And then they start suggesting places, and then we start getting invited to places. So we've pretty much stopped having to choose places. We're getting invited, unless there's some natural disaster like the tsunami or Hurricane Katrina or something. We'll go there, and perform for the people who've lost everything because of the hurricane or tsunami or whatever. But something we started about 7 years ago. For the first half of our history, we primarily just used magic to entertain. But now, one of our young magicians said, you know what we do? Because we've started, we have four groups around the world that we're training to become magicians.
That's beautiful.
And so our mission now is, thanks to one of our young magicians, Michael Muldoon, he said, you know what we do? We use magic to entertain, educate, and empower many of the most forgotten children in the world. So we have a group in El Salvador, a group in Bogota, and a group of boys in an orphanage in Mumbai, and a group of girls in Mumbai, all of whom are daughters of sexually trafficked women in the brothels in Mumbai. And we're training them to become magicians, and we're using magic to help them develop, you know, self-confidence and discipline and focus and self-esteem by learning and practicing and performing magic. So
that's so incredible. How long does it take them to learn some of these magic pieces?
Well, you know, they can learn. We go and we have very intensive kind of workshops with them and visits, and now we have magicians from those countries who are working with them when we're not there. They can get a pretty good little act together if they work at it, you know, like anything. After about a year, I'd say, you know, they can start performing, you know, together. Mm-hmm. You know,
and some of them have started performing.
Yeah.
In orphanages or for orphans. And in El Salvador, we had a group, and there were a couple, two or three kids that were really good at it, and we took them to Guatemala and to perform down there.
Oh, that was
wonderful. They did a great job.
Well, that's so incredible. So, you know that the purpose of this show, or my hope for the show, is that to inspire other people to take courage, to take the action that's in their own heart by listening to amazing people who are doing the same thing. And so it's important that I ask you this. It's so obvious that you are clearly doing work of the heart. And the places where you're going are so full of heartbreak. And so I really want to ask you, how do you face the heartbreak? How do you work with it within yourself? How are you able to go into such a dark space and bring the laughter and the joy and the hope that you do?
Well, I think because we go into these places to bring some fun and laughter, and most children still are in touch with that part of themselves that can, you know, that they can access their childlike their childlike their person sorry, the cat is.
Yeah, it's a little laughter.
Laughter. Yeah.
When the kids are laughing and having a good time, we're having a good time, and they can forget for a while. And you know, I
just thought of something. You know, there really is a lot of sadness, and I think one of the things that early on we felt, and we would talk about this with each other, these folks being isolated in these camps for so many years, these young people, and you can just see it in their eyes, they're so bright and talented, and some of the kids we've met in these camps, that they're just shut off from life, from possibilities. You know, it's just day after day in the refugee camps. You know, and they have so little. You know, and something that happened in one of the very first camps, which we wouldn't have realized if we hadn't talked, as Janet said, to some of the folks afterwards. This man said, you know, we laugh and we sometimes have a good time in our tukuls, in our little separate huts, you know, among our families. He said, but today we laughed for the first time I can ever remember as a community. We laughed. And it was really an amazing thing. He said, you know, he said, you brought us together as a community and we laughed together, and that was a wonderful thing, you know, that we kind of take for granted, you know.
We do see some pretty difficult things, you know, and at some of these places, at orphanages. I mean, sometimes just being in an orphanage and realizing that these children have no parents, you know, they don't really have anybody to hold them, and they're sort of like families, but, you know, it really makes you think about how much we do have, you know, here in this country, how privileged we are, and it's, we bring back a sadness with us. I think sometimes we're not quite aware of it, and then we find ourselves unexpectedly crying or, you know, being agitated for some reason. Is that about? And then we realize, yeah, we've just come back from some pretty amazing, seeing some pretty amazing stuff, and of course we have to process it somehow.
We spend also a lot of time when we come back, like just last Friday, I spent a couple of hours talking with a group of middle school kids, you know, about refugees, and Janet is really good at this when we talk to middle schoolers or high schoolers about inspiring them to find whatever it is they love, you know, whether it's soccer or math or art or whatever it is, that they can use that, you know, that love to make the world a better place, you know, by tutoring or volunteering or going to hospitals or traveling with us. Some of them have now traveled with us. So I think there's lots of things people can do, you know. But sometimes they are afraid, you know, that these places are so dangerous, you know. And sometimes they are, but I think it's important to try to do whatever you can, wherever you can do it.
That's beautiful. I saw you perform a trick where you tear up a piece of paper and you talk about it as you're tearing it, and then you chew it in your mouth. And I'm going to let you tell the story, but it seemed like a perfect metaphor for magic and hope.
Well, something that early on, along with that idea of hope, that making the impossible seem possible, I realized how magic shows are just filled with metaphors of hope. You know, even if you, a simple one, you take a piece of rope and you cut it clearly, you cut it in half, and then you put it in your hand and it's all healed and back together again. You know, I think on some, this is the psychologist in me, I think on some level that gets communicated, that the broken can be healed. And the trick that you're referring to is often the way we end the show. I have a piece of paper, a long, thin, you know, a piece of like tissue paper, and I talk about their lives. Imagine this is your life. It was a good life, you know. You had friends and family and work and school, and then the war came, or the hurricane came, or tsunami came, and your life fell apart, and you lost your friends and family, work. And as I say each of those things, I tear another piece of paper off of of the whole piece, and I end up with a handful of, you know, shattered lives and pieces. And I say, maybe with hope and courage and imagination and love, your life will come back together again. You know? And I try, and it doesn't work. And then they are saying magic words, and they really, really want it to come back together. It's really amazing to see these folks looking at my hand as if it really matters, you know. And then I'll sometimes say, oh, I forgot something, you know. I say, no matter where we go, it seems like the spiritual teachings say our suffering can be like bread, and it can make us stronger and more beautiful sometimes. And I start eating the pieces of paper. And then they all start saying magic words, and out of my mouth, LaFleur will often pull a 45-foot rainbow streamer, and all the pieces have come back together again into this beautiful rainbow streamer. And people in the camps stand on their feet, and they're just screaming. And this one man who worked for the UN, Mahari Maasho, he said to us one of the first, after one of the first shows we did that, he said, you could just feel a wave of hope go through the audience. So we try to end each show with that particular bit of magic.
It's truly a transformation. That is beautiful.
And people can see us doing that on the on our website.
Great. So let's talk about your website. Where can people find you and find out more about you, and where can they give money, donate to your cause? Because
please, you are
out there supported solely by donations and sponsors. So where can they find you?
Totally by individual donations. We have no big foundation support or anything like that.
They can go to Magicians Without Borders, all one word, .com. Even though we're a nonprofit, we ended up with .com.
Through some glitch, we lost .org, but anyhow, it's .com. And
there's a donation button right on every page there. And they can contact us through by email through the website as well.
And the website is filled with wonderful stories and photographs and a beautiful little 6-minute film where you can see that trick we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm. And our team, we have a number of volunteers who travel with us, and they're on there. And you know, it's always in the process of being updated. So,
if there's any magicians out there, or clowns, or artists who would like to travel with us, we would love you to get in touch with us.
Oh, fantastic!
We could use your help.
So people actually could join the circus and do it for a very good cause.
They run away with the circus, you know. And if they can pay their own way, that would be really wonderful. If not, if we can, we will.
Well, it has been so wonderful speaking with the two of you. And I thank you so much for all the amazing work that you're doing, the seeds that you are spreading, and the hope that you are imparting.
Well, thank you for inviting us to be on Passing for Normal. Something I try to do on a regular basis.
I know. How are you doing? How well are you doing?
We feel that's just what we're doing.
Normal is highly overrated.
I know. It sure is. Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sharon.
This has been Passing for Normal, conversations about seeding change in the world. To find out more about author Sharon Weil, go to passingfornormal.com. That's passing4normal.com. Donnie and Ursula Save the World is available in paperback, Kindle, and soon to be an audiobook at donnieandursula.com. So go out and do something brave today. M. Earth and I thank you.